Hello everyone, good afternoon. Welcome to From the Mishnah to Magid, part two. I'm excited to see all of you back for the second part in the five-part series, and I think we will get started just about now, as it's 1 o'clock. And so I guess in a way, for the first class that we did last week, we jumped the gun just a little bit. Because we hadn't even had Purim yet, but we were already talking about Pesach. Even though it says in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch codifies this, that it's Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag, Shoalim Vedorshim Hechas Achag. That's 30 days before the festival that you usually start talking about. That festival we did a little early because there was just so much to cover. We had 5 weeks and we weren't going to be able to fit it all in otherwise. But now we really are after Purim. We really are in that Pesach mindset. I know at least in my house, this is when everyone starts already to think about, oh wow, it's a lot of work to prepare for Pesach. There's gonna be a lot of cleaning to do. There's gonna be a lot of other things. You know, it's a whole production every year, as I'm sure it is for many of you. But I think, as I said last time, the Haggadah is something that's always just really excited me. And it's the Seder is really such an experience like no other, I believe, in our tradition. The ability to pass on the story and the values to children or to other participants of the Seder, and to participate and be a part of an evening where we feel our redemption from Egypt in a very, very palpable way. And I think the Seder is really designed to do that. And through this series, again, I hope to sort of show you some of the historical underpinnings of how that Haggadah came to be, but also some of the thematic things that tie it together. And in the first class, we talked about, were you a Karaite? Are you a Karaite if you left at Avadim Hayinu? And thankfully, what we uncovered is the answer is no. You're probably not a Karaite. Rather, if you had a Haggadah which left out Avadim Hayinu, you were using a Haggadah probably from Eretz Yisrael, from the land of Israel, in the early medieval period, in the period of when the Gaonim were in Bavel, that same time in Eretz Yisrael, they had a different tradition, a much shorter Haggadah that left out Avadim Hayinu, and a bunch of other things. But as we said, that over time, the Haggadah of the Gaonim became dominant. And the tradition in Eretz Yisrael more or less disappeared, at least when it comes to the separate Haggadah. This time, what I want to do is I want to talk about Manish Tana. And now we know everyone has Manish Tana in their Mishnah. I'm sorry, in their Haggadah, because the Manish Tana is in the Mishnah itself, as we saw last time, and we'll be sure to look at that again. But what I want to do is look how commentators have understood this paragraph that's colloquially called the four questions, because really, in good Jewish fashion, there are a lot of questions about the questions. And as we're going to see, that this is kind of complicated to figure out exactly what this paragraph Manish Tana is, what its function is, and honestly, how many questions are there in the four questions. So questions and answers are central to the mitzvah of the Seder. And we saw this last time. I'm going to share the source sheet now, and we'll look at another pasuk, another verse in the Torah, where it shows us how much the Pesach and the experience of the story of the Exodus is tied up in questions and answers. So let me just share the source sheet. Oh, you know what? I'm going to share that now. You should see it now. I'm also going to, in the chat, I will share a link to the source sheet. And that way you can have it online as well. Let's see. This should be the link right here, actually. Okay, so now you also have a link in the chat if you want to open up the source sheet yourself as well. So source number one over here, I took a pasuk from Sefer Devarim, from Moshe's retelling the stories that happened, and he's giving more laws and enjoyments on the people. And should be familiar to you. It says, "Ki yishalcha bincha machar le'mor," when your child asks you, saying, "Ma edus v'achukim v'mishpatim asher siva Hashem Elokeinu v'askam," what are the laws and the decrees that Hashem has enjoined upon you? V'amart levincha, you should tell your child, "Avadim hayinu lefarah b'mitzrayim," we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. "V'yotzeinu Hashem mitzrayim b'yad chazaka," and Hashem took us out of Egypt with a strong hand. So indeed, the child asks, what are all these laws that we're doing? And the parent answers, we're doing it because we are redeemed from Egypt. So it's showing that Pesach is tied up in this question and answer format. And indeed, the Mishnah in Pesachim, as we talked about already, talks about this. When the Mishnah in Pesachim goes through the order of the Seder, the Mishnah starts it off with questions. Kan haben shoel. Here, now the child asks, and it seems like the child is asking manishtana. Although we're going to get into exactly what's going on in the Mishnah in a minute, all that I have in source two, I just have just in Hebrew for you the source text, just the Haggadah itself, the manishtana. You have let's just say, why is this night different from all other nights? The first question relates to, here we're throwing chametz and matzah on all other nights. Other nights we eat chametz and matzah. On Pesach night, it's only matzah. The second portion is about on other nights, there's all these vegetables, but tonight at the Seder, it's just maror. The third question, as we have it, is about dipping, that other nights we don't even dip once. At the Seder, we dip twice. And the fourth one relates to leaning. On other nights, we don't lean. On Pesach night, we do lean. So that should be familiar to everyone. And then right after this, the Haggadah continues. Abadim hayinu lefarav Mitzrayim. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and Hashem took us out with a strong hand. So that's the Manashtana. But the question I really want to deal with is this accurately translated as the four questions? Are there four questions here? So I think we typically understand that the paragraph is doing something like this. The child is asking, why is this night different from all other nights? And then has four subparts to that question. Subpart number one is, why do we eat matzah and not chametz? Subpart two, why do we eat maror and not other vegetables? Subpart three, why do we dip? Subpart four, why do we lean? But if we understand manashtana this way, and I think this is often the typical way of understanding manashtana, it does not really seem like the Haggadah answers the questions. I mean, certainly, Avadim Hayinu, that we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, which is the paragraph that comes right after these four questions, does not address really any of these questions. If you want an answer about why do we eat matzah, why do we eat maror, it's not in that paragraph exactly. it doesn't really explain the structure of the Seder, such as why do we dip twice, as opposed to not dipping at all? Why do we lean, as opposed to not at all? And there's no very clear answer, at least right away, in that paragraph. So the commentators, of course, are been from the very beginning have been bothered by this question about Manashtana. And I want to give you some answers, and then maybe we'll see that we can actually, according to some of the answers, at least we can understand or translate Manashtana differently than we just did. So first I'll give you an answer as source number three from the Shiboleh Halakhet. Shiboleh Halakhet was a commentary in Rav Sidkiyahu Anav HaRofe in 13th century Italy. He was a central commentator on the entire Haggadah. He collects a lot of things and has his own stuff as well. And here's what he says in source number three. He says, "Ve'aleha mashivin tehillah," meaning we answer it. Meaning he's talking about the fourth question about the leaning first. She'omrim avadim hayinu lefarav Mitzrayim. When we say that we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, he tshuvas haseba levad. This is an answer to the leaning only. She'yatzana me'avdus lecheros. We went out of slavery to freedom. V'haseba hi simen libnei chorin. And leaning is a symbol, a symbolic thing that free people do. Ulefi shehi zechuka lekol hasheilos. And because it's kind of tied to all the other questions, mashivan aleha techila, we answer it first. So you're going to ask me, what about the other three questions about the matzah, the maror, and the dipping? He says, "B'sof Haggadah." It's at the end of the Haggadah. Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer. When we say that Rabban Gamliel says, "Kol shelo omer shlosha devarim elu haPesach lo yatzei yedei chavaso," anyone who doesn't say these three things on Pesach hasn't fulfilled his obligation: Pesach, matzah, umrori, that Pesach, matzah, and maror. So meaning, as you know, at the end of Magid, we get back to the issue of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. We get back to the issue in particular that of Rabban Gamliel explaining why we eat matzah, and we have a whole paragraph about that toward the end of Magid, and a whole paragraph about why we eat maror. They know that Egyptians invaded our lives, matzah, because we were redeemed in haste. And I guess the dipping as well is related indeed to the maror. So that also sort of gets answered along along the way. So basically what the Shibboleth Leket is saying is, yes, we have these four questions, and yes, really Avadim Hayinu can only be said at best to answer number four about the switch from slavery to freedom, which is why we lean, because we're trying to show ourselves like free people. But if you want to get the answers to the other three questions, you have to wait till the end of the Haggadah. Okay, that's one possibility. Let me show you, though, another possibility in source number four. This is Tanya Rabasi, Tanya Rabati, I guess, either way. It's another Rishon, another source from the 13th century, also in Italy, around the same time. And he says something very different. He says, and let me just explain it outside before we read it inside. Maybe the four questions is a misnomer. Maybe there were never four questions here. Maybe there is just one question. One question with four examples showing why the question is a good question to begin with. And what I mean by this is, if you look back here at source number two, and say, Manishtana halayla hazeh mikol ha'elos. The child is asking, what makes this night different from all other nights? Basically, why are the practices on this night different from the practices any other night of the year? And let me give you examples, says the child. One example is we don't eat chametz. The second example is that we eat maror. The third example, we dip. The fourth example, we lean. The child is not asking, according to this approach, why we do each of these four practices. The child is asking, why are we doing different things on this night? What is special about this night that differentiates it from any other night of the year, such that we do all these different things? But he doesn't actually want to know, according to this approach, what the explanation behind these four things. He just wants to know, why are we doing unusual things on this night? And this is the approach that Tani Rabasi takes in source number four. And he says, he's going on the paragraph of Avadim Hayinu Lefar Mitzrayim. And he says, he tshuvas manishtana. This is the answer to manishtana. The answer. One answer. Haben shoal manishtana. The child asks, what is going on tonight? Why is everything different? Va'aviv mashivo avadim hayinu. And his father answers, we were slaves. Lufikach nishtana halayla hazeh. And therefore, this night is different. Ve'achilas matzah omor ve'haseba mikol shar leilos. And that's why this night differentiates itself in the fact that we eat matzah and mor and we lean different than all other nights. Because the son, according to this, never wanted to know why we do all these four practices. He just wanted to know what makes this night different. And according to this approach, Avadim Hayinu is a perfectly good answer. The reason this night is different, the reason we have a whole Seder and we're doing things differently, is because of this transition from slavery to freedom. Because we were slaves and Hashem freed us, so now we do all these different things. So that's a second answer. There's actually a long and interesting article by Professor Richard Steiner from Yeshiva University, where he surveys exhaustively, I would say, all the different commentators from the early to the modern periods, and he believes that this answer in source number four is the approach of the majority. And he finds it the most likely, that Manishtana was never meant to be four questions, it's meant to be one question, with four examples. But that the child was never wondering about all four practices. So that's certainly another possibility that we could adopt. That's what's going on in Manishtana. Let's see. I saw some comments in the chat. Right. Okay. I see two questions in the chat. I'm actually going to get to both of them toward the end, because we're going to get back to both those points actually toward the end. So definitely hold in your mind the Shibboleth Leket's answer, the Shibboleth Leket's answer about the questions only being answered toward the end, because I definitely want to get back to that, because I think he actually might be making a more important point than we realize at first, but we're not going to be able to fully appreciate it until we understand the way the Mishnah and the text of the Haggadah developed a little more fully. Source number five is Pnei Ephraim, 19th century. Just another example that Professor Steiner gives of another commentary, this one a modern one, who says the same thing as the Tani Rabasi, that it's really one question. One question and one answer. I'm not going to read it because it's basically the same thing, just a little more in detail. Okay, but here's another issue that Professor Steiner brings up, and this is part two. What if Manishtana is not the question at all? And perhaps you've heard something akin to this approach before, because some people have said this also from early times to modern times. And Steiner says that the very first place you see this approach, or one of the very first places you see this approach, is in the Venice Haggadah from 1609, which had a Judeo-Spanish translation, which is not Ladino, I guess, but it's similar to Ladino, but it's not Ladino. Now, I don't know Judeo-Spanish or Ladino, but if you look on the left-hand side of this little picture I gave you from the Venice Haggadah, it has Manishtana in the Judeo-Spanish translation, and my understanding, to the best of my ability, and I did look through it a little bit to see if I could sort of figure out how it makes sense, and I think it does, is it's not asking a question at all. Manishtana is saying, Manishtana halayla hazemi kohaylos, how this night is different from all other nights. And then four statements after that on all other nights we eat leavened bread and unleavened bread, this night all unleavened. And then the second one also, look how different this night is from all the nights, because on this night we eat maror. Look how different this night is from all other nights, because on this night we dip twice. Look how different this night is from all other nights, because on this night we lean, and on other nights we don't lean. So, according to this approach, and this is just one early example of this, maybe there's no question at all. The whole issue, what the child is saying, is just making a statement. Look how different this night is from all other nights in these four different ways. And according to this, we don't have much of a question, because the child doesn't have a question. We don't need to have an answer. It doesn't really matter that Avadim Hayinu isn't answering the question, because it's just a statement on the part of the child about, look at all these things that are different. And in that way, it does kind of serve as an introduction to the Haggadah, because we are going to see these differences as we progress through the Haggadah and then through the meal, and also eating the matzah and the maror and all that stuff. But it was never really a question to begin with. So that's another possibility. What I think is particularly interesting, though, and here we're going to get back kind of into the history of the Haggadah, and also just to read the Mishnah and to read the Gemara over here. And I copied for you in source number 7 the Mishnah and the Gemara. I would say we'll call it native format. This is how it looks on the page, and you're going to see in a moment why I want you to see it how it looks on the page, because it actually plays a role in answering this question. But what we're going to see in just a moment is that this issue of is Manishtana a question or is it a statement already is ambiguous in the Mishnah itself, in the source text for the Manishtana itself. And let me show you what I mean. Okay, so if you look over here in source number 7 on the left-hand side, in the Hebrew Mishnah at the top of the page in big letters, Masnisa. So it Mazgu lo kosheni. So you mix or you pour the liter, the seder, the second cup. V'kan haben shoel aviv, and here the child asks his father. V'im ein da'as baben, and if the child doesn't have the intelligence to ask or the knowledge to ask, aviv melamdo, his father teaches him. Manishtana halayla hazemi kohaylos, how is this night different? Shebechol halaylos anochen chametzimasa. Okay. And then the Mishnah is going to go through some questions, which I'll read momentarily. But I want to stop here just for a moment to look at the very first few lines here. What is going on over here? It says that the son asks, what is the son asking? Doesn't say exactly. But if the son doesn't have the intelligence, his father teaches him. What is the father teaching him? So I think there's two ways to understand what's going on here. Maybe the very most, even simpler way is to understand that Manishtana is not the question. Kan haben shoal aviv, the son asks some kind of question. V'im ein da'as baben aviv melamdo, but if the child doesn't know enough to ask, his father teaches him. And what does he teach him? He teaches him a pro forma statement. He teaches him what's going on tonight? He's teaching him, Manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylos. Look how different this night is from all other nights. Anu ochlin chametz shebechol ha'alot anu ochlin chametz matzah. V'layl hazeh kulo matzah. On all the nights we eat chametz and matzah. On this night we eat only matzah. Shebechol ha'alot anu ochlin shar yirakos. All other nights it's, we eat other vegetables. Halal hazeh maror. Tonight maror. Shebechol ha'alot anu ochlin basar tzali shalok u'mavushal. On all other nights we eat roasted meat. Halal hazeh kulo tzali. We eat roasted or boiled meat. On this night, halal hazeh kulo tzali. This night's only roasted meat. So just keep that in mind also, that according to the Mishnah, we have a different question over here. We have a question about roasted meat, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit also, about what's going on, what happened, why does the Mishnah have a different question than we have in the Haggadah. But let's keep in mind that Mishnah has a different question here. Shebechol halaylos, well, see, the text already is, you can tell the Mishnah is confused about the last question about the dipping. Is it, we do dip pamachas, ein anu mapilim mafilu pamachas. Okay, whatever it is, something about dipping, but halaylaza shtei pamim, and this night it's two, we dip twice. Ulufidato shall ben avi malamdo. According to the intelligence of the child, the knowledge of the child, the father teaches him. So according to this approach of reading the Mishnah, which seems fairly straightforward, that if the child doesn't have something to ask, the father is teaching him manishtana. So in this case, manishtana is not a question at all. Manishtana is, as we said, in some Haggadah, as some Haggadahs translate, manishtana is a statement and not a question at all. However, I think it is equally plausible to read the Mishnah a different way. Let's go back to the beginning and try reading it one more time. Hopefully this will make sense. Mazgu lo kosheni, pour the second cup, v'kan haben shoel, aviv. And here the child asks his father. V'im ein das baben, aviv melamdo. And if the child doesn't have the intelligence to ask, his father teaches him how to ask. His father teaches him, it would be, you have to put in the word sort of aviv melamdo lishol, his father teaches him to ask, but given the fact that the word shoel already appears on the prior line, it is no big deal. I mean, that's often how Hebrew grammar works this way. It's not at all a stretch within grammar to say that what's the father teaching him? He's teaching him what to ask. And what does he teach him to ask? Manishtana halayla hazeh mikol ha'alos. He teaches the child to ask, why is this night different? And then four parts to that question about, you know, the matzah and the maror and all that. So I think it's equally plausible to read the Mishnah, to read the Mishnah either way, that the Mishnah is considering manishtana, the question that the son who isn't ready to ask what his father teaches him to ask, in which case manishtana is a question, or if the son doesn't know how to ask, his father just teaches him the words of manishtana, but not as a question, but as a statement about how this night is different. So I know it's a little complex understanding the two readings of the Mishnah here. I just want to make sure I didn't lose anyone. So let me look at the chat for a moment, and then I'll also open it up. Okay, Joyce asked, so to say there are no questions makes sense using the English word how, but is that the meaning of the Hebrew ma? It is what, was ma always a question similar to what? Well, I mean, maybe. I mean, I think ma is certainly less likely to be how, but I think you could say something like look what makes this night, kind of like as if you understand as an exclamation, it's kind of like, what makes this night different from all other nights? Then you say, on all the nights we eat matzah. On all the nights we eat chametz. On this night we eat matzah. I think it still kind of works.
I think if you say it in the words of the Tehillim, ma rabu ma'asecha Hashem. So there, how it's, okay. It's a statement of exclamation. So that's the way I see your second interpretation.
Okay. Yeah, no, that sounds good. That's the way
Yaakov
I think of it.
And Yaakov says, ma nora hamakom hazeh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we definitely see. No, all right. These are all great examples of where it does seem to mean how. Right. Where it's not a question. Yeah. Or rhetorical question at best. I think it's still kind of a question, but it's a rhetorical question. Okay. So yeah. So thank you for that. That definitely helps clarify the meaning of the word ma there. But I think what we have now though is we have two possibilities on how to translate manishtana and the Haggadah, at least, and we have. These two possibilities are already inherent in the Mishnah. Now, I want to go one step further with this, because not only is the Mishnah unclear about whether these are questions or not, if you look at the Gemara that continues right after the Mishnah here in source number 7, the same ambiguity appears yet again. And this time it's just even a little more confusing. But let me try to go through this with you. So if you look at the Gemara, and this is, I have like a little yellow arrow there that I sort of put there, although it got kind of cut off. where it says Gemara in bold letters, and then at the end of the line, Tana Rabbanan. So we learned in a Brisa, so in an outside teaching from the Mishnaic period, Chacham beno shoalo, that if he's wise, the wise son asks. Vim eno chacham, if he's not wise, ishto shoala, so his wife can ask him something. Vim lav, and if not, hu shoala atzmo, he asks himself. Vafilu shnei tamid chachamim shiyodim hilchos pesach sholin zetze, and even two scholars who know all the laws of Pesach, they still ask each other. What are they asking each other though? That's the question. What are they? It says there's definitely questions and answers, as we saw in the Mishnah, are an integral part of the Seder. The question is, and we know now that from the Gemara and from this Brisa, that even if someone's by themselves, they still have to ask themselves something. The question is, what are they asking? So the Gemara then continues and says, Manishtana halayla hazem mikol halaylos, shebecho halaylos anumat bilim pam achas, halayla hazeh shtei pa'amim, that all... why is this night different from all other nights? The dipping question. Okay, now here's but there are two dots. Notice those two dots before that? So it seems over here that the Mishnah is just taking another header from the Mishnah, because the Gemara is just taking another header, because the Gemara does this frequently. The Gemara will comment on one part of the Mishnah, and then there'll be a header for the next part of the Mishnah, which shows that the Gemara is moving to comment from part one of the Mishnah then to part two of the Mishnah. Because indeed, after this header, we have the two dots again where it finishes the quote from the Mishnah, and then Maskif La Rava, and Rava asks another question about dipping. So it sounds, based on the way the dots are placed, that we don't know what these people, let's say a wise person or a person who's by themselves with the Seder, what they're asking themselves. And then the Gemara goes on to comment on a different part of the Mishnah about the question of dipping. However, it is not at all clear that those dots are supposed to be there. And in fact, different manuscripts of the Gemara have different versions, where some of them have the dots and some of them don't have the dots. So if the dots are there, what I would say is so if the dots are not there, what you could do is you could read it as a continuation. So, even two wise people who know the laws of Pesach, Sholin Zed, Zed, what do they ask each other? Manishtana halayla zemiko halaylos. They ask the Manishtana to each other or to themselves or whatever it is. So according to this, the Manishtana is clearly meant to be a question that we are asking, if we assume these two dots are not where they're supposed to be. The question that the people are asking is Manishtana. If the two dots, however, are supposed to be here, you could easily read it that they're asking each other something, but it could just be whatever. Because we saw that questions and answers are important. You have to ask some question about Pesach. But, and in fact, there's another Gemara, which I decided to leave out of the source sheet this time, but it talks about a child asking a different question about taking away the Seder plate. And one of the Amoraim responds, well, you've exempted us from the Manashtana. Because according to this, then the Manashtana isn't the integral question that you have to ask. It's not a text that you have to recite. Rather, the Manashtana is one example of a question. But there are other questions you could ask too. And maybe Manashtana itself might not even be a question, as we saw. Then maybe the Manashtana is just a statement. So I think in the Gemara itself, it's also not completely clear whether the Manashtana is meant to be the question, or whether Manashtana is meant to be a statement, and the question might be something spontaneous, might be something else. So I think what we've seen in source number 7 is that both in the Mishnah and the Gemara, there are two distinct ways to read Manashtana. Is it a question? Is it not a question? And what I want to show you now in sources 8, 9, 10, and actually beyond, is that this issue continues, meaning it seems like there are different approaches among the Gaonim and among the Rishonim as well to is Manashtana supposed to be a question or not. Okay. So in source number 8, this is Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel is an early Rishon, an early commentary on the Gemara. He's on the side of the Gemara, and I have a little photocopy here, not such high quality, of his comment over here. And if you look, he's talking about the same Gemara we just read. He first quotes the Mishnah, Mazgulo Koshenu, Mikana Ben Shoel, Bechuluhu. They pour the second cup, and here the son asks, etc. Tana Rabbanu, we learned in the Brisa, Imhaya Ben Chacham, HaBen Shoel's Aviv. If the child is wise, he asks his father, Ve'imlab Ishto Shoelaso, his wife asks him, Afilu Shnei Tamini Chacham, HaBekin, Behochas HaPesach, and even two wise people who are know the laws of Pesach, Sholin Ze Ezze, Manishtana Halayla Hazami Kolayos. They ask each other the Manishtana. So you can see over here, Rabbeinu Chananel did not have the dots. If you look back in source number 7, right, there's the dots before the Manishtana. Rabbeinu Chanan is quoting the Gemara, and he does not, he just continues. He reads right into it. He sees it as part of the same passage. He did not have the dots. So he sees the as Manishtana as a question. Source number 9, Rav Nachmanai Gaon. We talked about Rav Nachmanai Gaon last time, actually, extensively. He was the one who criticized what he believed to be the Karaite Haggadah, which was actually a Haggadah from Eretz Yisrael. But some of his stuff is quoted and been maintained independently in the Oster HaGaonim, works of the Gaonim that are printed together. And he's going here through the order of the Seder. Let's see if I can find exactly the line we want to see here. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Four lines up in the first paragraph. At the end of the line, you have like a Yud Aleph with like a parenthetical after it. He says, but Omer, so he talked about saying Halach Ma'ani before that, which we have in our Haggadah as well. And the Halach Ma'ani indeed is a paragraph from the time of the Gaonim, which we'll talk more about in class number 4. But Omer also Shemekadesh, and the one who says Kiddush says, Manishtana Halayla Haza Mikol Halaylo Shvachol Halaylos Enanamat Bilim Afilu Pa'amach Haslayla Haza Beis Pa'amim. So he says, the one who says Kiddush says Manishtana. So there's no absolute proof here to what Rav Nachmanai Gaon is saying, but it sounds to me, if the person who's saying Kiddush is saying the Manishtana, he's not asking the Manishtana, he's just saying it, it seems to me that Rav Nachmanai Gaon understands, like one of our approaches, that Manishtana is not a question, but a statement. But, however, you look at Rav Sadia Gaon, just a couple generations later than Rav Nachmanai Gaon among the Gaonim in his Siddur, and he clearly understands it differently. On the right-hand side, you have the Judeo-Arabic that Rav Sadia Gaon wrote in, but you also have his Hebrew translation here on the left hand side. And let's see, let's just start from the middle of the top line there. Umemalim Kosheni, you fill the second cup. Vim Yesham Yalad Bardas, and if a Yalad who has intelligence to do so, Yamor Raglav, he stands up. Vyisha Madavar Halayla Ze Kafisha Avar, and he asks about this night like I'm going to explain. And the wisest person among the group is going to answer him. That's interesting. Just as a parenthetical here, it's kind of interesting. You see already this idea of who's asking. Well, obviously the child is asking Manishtana, but he stands up to do it, which I think is often typical now too. The child will stand up to ask Manishtana. And he has the wisest person answering. And then he continues, Vim Eim Shan Yelad Bardas. And if there's no child who can do it, the wisest person there, he's going to ask and answer. Vizos hasha'ela, and this is the question. And what's the question? Manishtana halayla zamikolayla. So he clearly says Manishtana is a question. And then, if you look after he finishes the paragraph Manishtana on the left-hand side again, vizos hachuva, and this is the answer. Avadim hayinu lefarav mitzrayim. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. So it sounds from Rav Sadia Gaon pretty clear that unlike Rav Nachmanai Gaon and unlike some of the others we saw, he does not consider Manishtana just a statement to be read by the leader of the Seder, but he says God is answering, and that Avadim Hayinu is the answer to the question. Parenthetically then, also, I think what we see from Rav Sadia Gaon is he thinks like the Tanya Rabasi, that this is one Avadim Hayinu is the answer. He doesn't say, for example, Vizos HaSheilot, these are the questions, or Vizos, right? He says, this is the question, Vizos HaTshuva, and this is the answer. So it sounds like he also thinks that we're talking about like one question and one answer, and Avadim Hayinu is the single answer to the single question of Manishtana. But anyway, we see here in the Gaonim too, there is this difference. There is already this dispute we saw back in the Mishnah and the Gemara about, is this a statement? Is this a question? Okay. So let's also look at the Rambam, because I think these ambiguities are actually present in the Rambam as well. The Rambam has an extensive treatment of the Haggadah in his Mishnah Torah. Look at the underlying part of number 11. Umoski na kosa sheni vikan haben shoal. Pour the second cup. Here the son asks. The omer hakore, and the reader says, manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylos. What does that sound like? Sounds like the reader is saying manishtana. The son is maybe asking something, but it's not manishtana. But manishtana is just the statement then that's being said. Possibly. It's not 100% clear. But maybe the Rambam is saying the same thing. Source number 12. Okay. Vitzarech, source number 12, the Rambam says, also somewhere else in Hilchos Chametz Matzah. He says, Vitzarech laso shina b'layla hazeh, you need to make changes this night, kadesh yiru habanim, so the children see v'yishalu, and they ask, v'yomru, and they say, manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylos, and they ask, manishtana, ad sheyashiv lahem, until it's answered to them, v'omru lahem, and it's told, they are told, kach v'kach era v'kach v'kach haya, this and this happened, this and this was. And then, if you look at the second part that I underlined here, Ein lo isha, he, that Gemara we saw, he doesn't have a wife, sholin zet zet manishtana, avafilo hayu kulan chachamim, even if they're all wise, they still have to ask manishtana hayu self, sholin la'atza manishtana hayu zet, he still asks manishtana, so it almost sounds like a contradiction in the Rambam. Because over here, it sounds like he's saying that the children are supposed to ask manishtana. And if one is by himself, he asks manishtana to himself. Even though in source number 11, it sounded like the reader is saying manishtana, it's not a question at all. So I don't want to get too involved in this. People have tried to answer why, how it could be that the Rambam seems to contradict himself within two, about whether manishtana is a statement or a question. It could be it's no contradiction at all. It could be that it could be that he's just adopting the language of the Mishnah, meaning for an unscripted question too, like in source number. And to ask manishtana, he's sort of saying that manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylos is kind of a general question, that the child is asking something and then someone has to answer something. It doesn't mean that necessarily the child has to ask those, you know, four, that text of four things. And it could be again, and that's how he's reading it, and then it might not be a contradiction at all. And if that's the case, then manishtana could still be like a ritual statement that the leader reads, as long as some question was asked. But that maybe then that's the answer to the contradiction. George says Rambam needed a good copy editor. Perhaps. I mean, there's certainly. I mean, obviously, there's a much better, bigger question. But like, obviously, the Rambam is. There are so many shiurim and pilpulim that are built on all the contradictions in the Rambam. So certainly, I'm not surprising anyone by positing the possibility that the Rambam has contradictions. okay. All right. So I think we've seen quite a bit of this particular one issue about is this question versus statement here through a couple other related ways to read the Manishtana. And maybe we'll get back to the Shibboleth HaLeket's answer about the it being at the end of the Seder. But first, and perhaps there are earlier sources read Manishtana this way, but I thought this is one of the most interesting and creative reads of Manishtana. This is the Chatan Sefer. How's my connection? I just got a message that was unstable. Can you still hear me?
Almost. Yeah, we can. It was crazy for a minute.
Okay.
It's fine.
Okay, so it's good now. All right, good. Okay, so the Chatan Sofer lived in the 19th century. He was, I think, the son, let's see, he was the grandson of the Chasam Sofer, the Chatan Sofer, who you might have heard, you know, the Chatan Sofer was his grandson, Samuel Ehrenfeld, lived from 1835 to 1883, and his Haggadah is often published along with his grandfather's, the Chasam Sofer, and he says something very different about how to understand Manishtana. Let me read it for you in source number 13. For Ra'isi laharbe me'am aforshin, I've seen many commentators say, Shadarko derach v'peskazu, they have a different approach to this. She'ikir ha'shela hu Manishtana halayla hazemiko halaylas. The question is, why is this night different from all the nights? Umasha amar achrakach, and what it says afterwards, she'bechol halaylos, when it says the next part about on because on all other nights, pi'tshuvas ha'shela. This is the answer to the question. So meaning, it would go like this, something like this. The child asks, why is this night different from all other nights? Or what makes this night different from all other nights? And the father or someone else answers, oh, because on all other nights, we eat chametz and matzah. Tonight we eat only matzah. On all vegetables, this night, so you could read it that way. Another,
we didn't hear your answer.
Oh,
you,
sorry.
You were flaking again.
Okay, let me say it again. I think is suggesting here that maybe the question is simply manish tana. The child is asking, what makes this night different? And then someone answers the child, it's different because on all other nights, we eat chametz and matzah. Tonight it's only matzah. And all four things. So that's another way of reading it. That the question and answer is self-contained. Then you don't have to wonder, where are the answers to the questions? Those are the answers. Just maybe the father is answering him or her that different in that we eat matzah and do all these other things. Or along the same lines as this, perhaps you could read it that maybe the manish tana, maybe the leader of the Seder, let's say the father, is asking the child, what makes this night different? Then the child gives the answers. It's like a pop quiz. Oh, what's different? On this night we eat matzah. On this night we eat maror. On this night we dip. On this night we lean. So I think none of the Rishonim, as far as I know, like the early commentaries make this suggestion, but I think it's definitely a creative reading of the paragraph as it is in the Haggadah today, at least. So I just wanted to bring that up. It didn't really fit into the other ones, but I just wanted to bring it up as another interpretive possibility, which does exist, about how to read the Manash Tana. So we've seen now there are so many different ways of reading it. We've seen four questions, one question, four statements, or one question and four answers. Right. And so those are all possible ways of reading the Manash Tana.
But it's not really an answer. It's just a description. It will be an opening to a discussion of the rest of the Haggadah. I can see it that way, but it's not really an answer. You're just describing the situation. You're not giving a reason why.
Right, but maybe it's just saying, what makes this night different? Meaning, maybe the person who's asking, enumerate the differences. There's enough ambiguity in the words manish tana that I think that's an interpretive possibility as well. Again, no one, the early commentators did not understand it this way. And I think probably they didn't because it's not as likely of an approach. It does seem, for example, from the Mishnah and the Gemara that it's either something the child is asking or something the child is being told. And that it's not sort of divided as part of it being a question, part of it being an answer. Okay. So what I have here for three is, or maybe three questions, because now we have to really do some historical investigation along the lines that some people were commenting toward the beginning of the class, is maybe Manish Tana, the text of it that we have in front of us today in the Mishnah, is not the original text of the Mishnah. So
this edition leaves out the opening in the regular Mishnah of Mazgulo Kos Sheni. Is that
right, so
absent?
No, I did. I just didn't copy the whole text. I copied this from another article because it was just the clearest written and it had a translation beside it. But I can. It's a little confusing. I just copied just the portion from that article that had the text of the questions.
But the language of Mazgulo Kos Sheni is still there.
Yeah, it's still there. Yeah. Okay. So we saw in our text of the Mishnah, source number seven, four questions. Let's say the first one being about matzah, the second one being about maror, the third one being about roasted meat, and the fourth one being about dipping. If you look though at the Parma manuscript of the Mishnah in source number 14, which is one of the more reliable manuscripts of the Mishnah, it seems like there are only three different questions. The first question over here is Shebechol Halelos Anumat Bilim Pam Achas Halayla Hazeh Shtei Pamim. That on all the nights we dip once, and tonight we dip twice. So already there's a difference here. because we have in our text, we don't, well, it's not clear what we have in the text of the Mishnah at least, but we have has once and this time we dip twice. It seems like, at least in this manuscript of the Mishnah, which is a more reliable manuscript, the question is about dipping twice versus dipping once. We'll get back to that in a second. Let's look at the second one. The second question is, Shbechol halaylos anu ochlim chametzu matzah, halayla hazeh kulo matzah. It's similar to the one a question we have. All the nights we eat both chametz and matzah, tonight only matzah. And the third question is, Shbechol halaylos anu ochlim basar tzali, shalak umavushal, halayla hazeh kulo tzali. And all the nights we eat roasted meat, we eat boiled meat, tonight we only eat roasted meat. So assuming that this is a more authentic text of the Mishnah, I think we can kind of understand a little better what's going on over here. So we already know that in our Haggadah, we took out the question about roasting meat from the Mishnah, and instead we have a question about leaning. And the difference may kind of make sense, that roasting meat refers to the Karban Pesach, which after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, was not being eaten anymore. So that question wasn't going to be relevant. However, I will say that there were communities that continued to eat roasted meat at the Seder as a remembrance of the Karban Pesach for quite a while after the destruction of the temple. So it could be that the Mishnah still has had that question in there for communities. Mishnah may very well be reflecting a post-temple reality, but at the same time, the question was still there because people were eating roasted meat in memory of the Karban Pesach. The Gaonim, though, like we're talking, 700s, 800s, 900s, said that this was not a good idea. It was too similar to the Karban itself. So the Gaonim kind of, among other things, squelched out that custom, and people don't really do that anymore where they eat roasted meat. Instead the question changed to a question about leaning, because leaning may have been very familiar to people. It probably wasn't asked originally because leaning was something that was familiar to people living in the Greco-Roman context where people did lean, but not so familiar to people outside that context. So that's why the question about leaning came in. Okay, so that explains the difference, at least with regard to the question about the roasted meat versus, and then instead the question about leaning. So what's going on with this question about dipping, and why? Which question is missing from here? The question about maror, the question seems to be missing from this manuscript of the Mishnah. But that doesn't make a lot of sense because maror already is obviously being eaten from the very beginning. That's part of the Seder. That certainly seems to be something that was part of the Seder. So if that's the question, well, if that's the case, why is there no question about maror in this manuscript of the Mishnah? So the answer, I believe, is that what people say is that the question about dipping is really a question about maror, because that was the thing that was dipped. If you look in source number 15, it says over here earlier in the Mishnah that the vegetables that you can fulfill your obligation with, one of them is chazeret, and one of them is maror. And then in another place in the Mishnah, it says, for actually the Mishnah we've been focusing on, about bringing vegetables to the leader of the Seder, and one of the things you're dipping, hayimetabo bechazeres, he dips the chazeret into some kind of liquid, and then it says afterwards, you brought before the leader the matzah and the chazeret and the charoset. So it seems over here that in these ayot, the point I made is chazeret can be a stand-in for maror. That, things that, and even on the Seder plate, we have some kind of maror-like thing in this spot for the chazeret. I'm not going to get into the whole history of this and how this came to be, but the point is it seems from the Mishnah that chazeres is a stand-in for maror, and indeed you are dipping. And the Mishnah talks about dipping this chazeres, this maror. So it would seem that probably in the time of the Mishnah, when that dipping was something that was common at the time, so people would have dipped at a meal, like a fancy meal, at least once, or would have dipped once. This time we're dipping twice, and one of the dippings we're doing is the dipping of the maror. So it seems like the maror, and that's we do that today as well in the Seder. So it seems like that was the question about dipping was originally a question about the maror. So maror isn't really missing, but that the question about dipping was understood to include the maror. At some later time, dipping was no longer so clear that was talking about maror to people. So they added a separate question about maror. So the main point, though, I want to show by bringing this mission with the three questions is, if that's the case, that this was the original text of the Mishnah and the question about dipping was about maror. So what do we have over here? We have a question about maror, we have a question about matzah, and we have a question about roasted meat or the Karban Pesach. If that's the case, these three things correspond perfectly to Rabban Gamliel: Pesach, matzah, umaror. So it very well may be that even if we say that these are all three separate questions, like we started out with, why do we do the Pesach? Why do we do the matzah? Why do we do the maror? The answer is simply in Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel's paragraphs explains all three things. Pesach Hashuma, matzah Hashuma. Why do we do all these three things? So you still have to sort of understand, why is Rabban Gamliel so distant geographically from the questions? Like, why do we ask Manish Tana at the beginning but don't get to Rabban Gamliel at the end? But, I mean, maybe it's just sort of literarily it makes sense to bookend the Seder that way. You start with the questions and you end with the answers. Or it could very well be that they're really not that far apart from each other in the original Haggadah. In the time of the Mishnah itself, what do we have? We talked about this last time, that you ask the Manish Tana, you doresh me'arami ovid avi asof kol ha'parsha kula, then you darshan the psukim of our father was a wandering Aramean, or our Lavan tried to oppress our father, and then you basically, Rabban Gamliel is the next Mishnah after that. And we saw, for example, in the Eretz Yisrael Haggadah, that the drashos from Arami Ovid Avi were very short. It was not really all that long. So maybe the distance kind of grew over time. By the time of the Gaonim, when the Haggadah comes more into its full form that we have it today, yes, there was a pretty great gap between the questions and the answers, but maybe in the original Haggadah, certainly in the Mishnah, the gap is not as great as it was. So if that's the case, then it could very well be we can rehabilitate the idea that the answers to the Manish Tana, there are questions in the Manish Tana, separate questions, and the answers really come into play at the end with Rabban Gamliel, when he explains the reason for Pesach, the reason for Matzah, and the reason for Maror. Okay, so that's all I had for this time. I can take down the source sheet, and then I can answer your questions more effectively. I think I resolved what was in the chat, so if anyone has any further questions, they'll feel free to ask me. Yeah, Asher, do you have a question?
The Mishnah begins with the words "Mazgulo Kos Sheni."
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we read it as "Vishoel Habein"? Period. That is, we never do that. What's going on mm-hmm. here? What the heck is this?
Mm-hmm.
Why
mm-hmm.
are we pouring out another thing of wine? We always uh-huh. make kiddush and we have the meal, right? Mm-hmm. Why are we doing this? The mm-hmm. rest is going to be the answer. What's going to follow is, oh, you ain't seen nothing yet. Look at mm-hmm. all these other changes that are going uh-huh. to be. Hell, hold your horses and wait.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Interesting. Okay. I hadn't thought of that before. I like it. I think it's certainly, yeah, it sounds reasonable. I mean, yeah, that's already
maybe
a pretty big change.
Maybe that's what
the
Chatham Sofer is saying.
Maybe. That's interesting. And that's it. I mean, that's how you would read him back into the Mishnah.
Yeah, that's okay. Because the Mishnah is strange. It begins right. with the words "pour out a second cup." You mm-hmm. never do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I like that. Thanks.
If you look at it as the child asking the questions, then nothing's happened yet, right? We haven't dipped twice yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We haven't, mm-hmm. it's a classical question that's been asked.
Right.
So So what's the answer to that?
Right. So I mean, that's a fair point. Like the child hasn't seen that yet. I mean, I think, and I didn't really discuss this extensively, but I think kind of either way, we have to understand Manushtana as a ritualized text, meaning that whether it's intended to be asked sort of as a question or whether it's a statement or something else, either way, it is not clearly the free form question. Even in the Mishnah, we said Vikana ben Shoel, here the child asks, and presumably there the child can ask anything. But if, and then it says, Im das, ein das beben, aviv malamdo, that the father teaches him something to ask. And then there's the Manushtana. So it seems like even in the Mishnah, even assuming Manushtana is a question the child is supposed to ask, it's only a question the child is supposed to ask if the child doesn't have their own question. It's sort of the ritualized, formalized version of the question based on that set text. Right. So either way. And so what happened though over time? It seems like over time, like many things. I mean, once, I probably should have said this before, but I didn't. Once you have a text in the Mishnah, the text of Manushtana, it is kind of inconceivable that it's not going to make its way into the Haggadah. Because this is the Seder, right? This is the Seder. Like, these texts are going to have to become part of what we say. That just tends to be what we do. If there's a text for something in the Mishnah or in the Gemara, that's going to become a text that gets incorporated into what we say. So even if we say that that wasn't, let's say, the original questions the child asked, it kind of makes sense that we wouldn't want to leave it by the wayside and it would become part of the Haggadah. But yes, I agree with your premise that this is a formalized version of a text that couldn't actually be based on a child, an inexperienced child who hadn't seen anything yet.
Good. Thank you.
Let's see. Alan says, that is the basis for the Chatan Sofer. The father makes the four statements about what is coming up in the Seder. Okay, yeah, right. Okay, let's see. Oh, here's another comment here. David Eisen says, the answer provided by Rabbi Mordechai Breuer to this question of how can the child ask about two dippings should not yet happen is based on the Mordechai. The Mordechai is one of the Rishonim who explains that during the time of the temple, the family first ate the meal and proceeded to conduct Magid only afterwards. The reason for this order was due to the fact that the Pesach needed to be eaten before Chatzos. Okay, interesting. I wasn't aware of that, Mordechai. Okay, so but according to that, then the child would have already seen, would have already seen everything because Magid happened later, right? I mean, I think even in the Mishnah as we have it now, I don't have the text in front of me right now, but I thought that some of the dippings in the Mishnah, at least, are happening before Magid. I think even in the text of the Mishnah that we have today. Any further questions? Okay, well, sounds good. Next week we're going to continue, same time, and we will talk about the structure of the Seder. We'll talk more about, not just the structure of the Seder, the structure of Magid in particular, and the way it tells the story, because it's really actually quite confusing the way it tells the story, so we're going to look thematically at about why that might be the way it is. And I'll see you then.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon has some beautiful stuff on that.
Oh, wonderful. I haven't seen his approach. I've seen other approaches. Well, maybe we'll talk about that more next time though.
Thank you.
It was very enjoyable too.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.